This is Jennifer Hale, and you're listening to the Five-ish Fangirls podcast. And, I should go.
The tangents as we continue all the way to episode 456 of the Five-ish Fangirls podcast, and it has been hot minutes since we did this. I don't know if my microphones can pick that up or not.
I heard paper. Yeah. And I know what that means. Rachel, how close to overflowing is that hat?
Well, it's not a hat, so that helps. Welcome everyone to this week's episode of the Five-ish Fangirls podcast. So glad you're just let's start off like we're doing with the virtual table and see who's joined us this week. I may have added some names earlier today too.
This is Chrissy in Salt Lake City.
This is Holly from Wisconsin.
And this is Rachel in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
Hello. Yes.
How are we doing?
Not bad.
Well, my blood pressure went down after the end of that soccer match, so I'm good.
There you go. There
yeah, I was watching the chat because I had other duties, and it's just like, not watching right now.
Wait till you watch the highlights.
Yeah,
I love that's that. Speaking of Paramount Plus, I love that they do that they give you the option. Mm-hmm. You can either watch the whole thing if you want, or they have highlights where it's like 15 minutes, and it just gives you the important bits.
Depending on how the game is, because some of them I've noticed were like eight some could be a little totality, longer. But still they're good.
that is the NFL Red Zone effect. I don't got time for this. Just show me the highlights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, that was a high emotions were just running high all over the place. I've never seen, guys, in soccer get into kerfuffles like that. So that was just crazy, but. Inter won, beating the home rivals, AC Milan.
Which is important.
It wasn't quite the steamroll that the last meeting was where they won 5-1. They just steamrolled over AC Milan. But they did win, and with that they clinched their 20th league title. So which for every 10 titles, you get a little star on your jersey. Right now, I have just the one star on my jersey, but now they'll have two because they got 20. So
that's fancy.
Yes.
In a way, I'm kind of glad that the other league that they were in. It didn't work out the way we wanted it to.
Yeah.
We could focus a little bit more and we got this.
Yeah. That was in Zaki's focus was winning Serie A. So as exciting as it was for them to get to the final of Champions League last year, winning that 20th, earning that 20th Serie A title. And getting that second star was important because Inzaghi had won one himself when he was a player. So
now to get one as a coach, even sweeter.
Yep.
Rock on.
Yes.
I have to get excited as we're talking sports ball things. It's in the same sport. It's not soccer. It's hockey. Salt Lake City and an NHL team!
Yeah!
We are.
Yay.
Apparently, Arizona is not a hockey state.
Yes, hockey. Yeah, Arizona, funnily enough, that they don't have like ice and snow or anything, but they've had a hockey team, but it was very poorly managed. They've been playing the last several years in a college hockey arena, and they have not been able to get a new one. So the NHL is telling them, nope, you have to leave. You have to go somewhere where you can actually play in a professional hockey arena. And well, what do you know? We've got one up here. And so we're getting Arizona's team. Although there are some shenanigans where we don't get to keep the coyote mascot, and we don't get to keep the coyote's name, which I'm really bummed about because that would have just
that been perfect. Sucks.
It does, and so the owner or the guy in Arizona who owned the team who had to sell it, he gets to keep the name. So when the NHL expands again, their first place that they will expand is Arizona, and I'm like, whatever, this makes no sense, but.
Stupid. It's his money.
Well, whatever. But the owners up here, they're going to do sort of a fans name the, you know, pick the mascot sort of thing. So we'll see what we end up with. There are some possibilities.
Change the design.
We could have used coyotes. I'm so pissed about that, but. There's some good possibilities. I mean, our minor league team is the Grizzlies, so we can't use that. Although we have had Golden Eagles years ago, was a different minor league hockey team. So I'm like, or, you know, I don't know how that would mesh well with Golden Knights, but that could be a possibility.
Except I think there's already a Knights in the NHL.
Yeah, Golden Knights, yeah. But no, I'm talking about Golden Eagles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was a minor league hockey team we had years and years and years ago before we got the Grizzlies. So we could do Golden Eagles, unless the Golden Knights throw a fit about it. I don't know. Salt Lake Stingers has been floated about because, you know, we have the whole bee thing.
Mm-hmm.
Our minor league baseball team is already the Bees, so can't do that. Anyway, but this will be interesting. Somebody floated the idea of the Yeti. I'm like, no, we're not doing the Yeti. No. But I'm excited. Oh, and the funny thing is, so the arena in Arizona would like it could seat like about 5,000 people. Yeah, once people started, or you know, once the deal was finalized. They got like 6,000 season tickets already spoken for. I don't know if they're actually sold yet, but
yeah,
we've already outsold Arizona. So those stuff that in your pipe and smoke it. I mean, I'm sorry, Arizona, that you.
Well, I mean, having multiple options.
Yes.
For things like sports.
Mm-hmm.
Is. Generally, economically, a good thing. It's like you guys don't have a NFL team.
And there's no way we could because we're just not a big enough market for football.
Yeah, so you do have the NBA.
We have the NBA, and they are pretty well firmly established. We have Major League Soccer, and they've actually won a couple of titles, which really makes me sore because the Jazz have been here forever and haven't won. I'm not bitter. But I'm really hoping that our hockey team can do well. And now I really need to figure out. I mean, all I know about hockey really is that little round black thing goes in the net. The guys skate after it, and every once in a while they get in a fist fight.
That's pretty much all you need to do.
And so, that little black thing can be fast and deadly.
It's a lot like soccer, actually, except it's a black and white, usually, round thing. Not always, though.
But yeah, I don't know. I've kind of like started spurring an interest in hockey in the last few years. And I, you know, Nick had asked me, like, well, who, like, what team? And I was like, I don't know. I don't really know what team to pick. And honestly, I guess I was just waiting for us to get one. So,
yeah.
they're coming to town, and I'm excited.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's like over here, the WNBA, we got Caitlin Clark.
You guys got the lottery over there.
Yeah, which tells you how good we've been recently if we got the first round pick.
Yeah. I have
unless we traded for that, but I doubt it usually. But yeah, apparently since draft day where we got Caitlin, the Fever tickets both for home and away games are like sold out.
Yep.
So, because so many people want to see her play, even if she's not playing for their team. So.
Yep. That was a pretty big deal. So.
Yeah, and then the Pacers are in the playoffs, and actually they play at home this weekend, the same weekend as PopCon, so that should make things interesting downtown.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So again, having multiple sports options can be a blessing and a curse.
Yes. So. Well, I mean, I've already seen people complain like, well, why are you going to wait? Like, we know, because they're also trying to get a Major League Baseball team here too, which is possible, but, but they're like, where are you going to put them? That downtown is so stuffed full. I'm like, there's a whole chunk of the south end of the valley where you could probably spread that out a little bit. So you don't have to stuff everything downtown. I know it's convenient and I know all this, but I mean, good grief. Our minor league baseball team is building a new arena or a new ballpark down at the south end of the valley where there's all this open space and there's a big highway and light rail going right by there. It'll be fine. Stop freaking out. I'm like, come on, this is a good thing. We're going to have fun. I don't need all you negative Nellies.
Yeah.
Raining on my parade. Just
quit peeing on my Cheerios.
Seriously, it's like, if you don't like it, you don't want it, you don't have to watch it. It's okay.
Exactly.
Don't yuck my yum.
Yep.
So this will be fun. I hope they do good. I'm excited.
See, folks, we're not just nerds for nerdy things. Something. I don't know. Anyway.
You know what? Sports nerdery and nerd nerdery, they're two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, there's some overlap there.
Yes, there is.
Yep. So
you can like both. It is okay.
Yeah. Yep. You could be fan, you can be an excited fan about different things.
Not all the sports people gave us wedgies. Some people were sports people.
Yeah.
Sports people back in the day, so.
Yep.
Time.
Anyways, beyond the sports news, non-sports related news, we got a trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine.
I am glad they have made it abundantly clear that
it is going to be R-rated.
It's R-rated. It's Deadpool,
yeah.
Cool as we know.
Way howdy.
Him. There will be no nerfing.
Even just the trailer, do not play it with their children.
Yes,
nearby because there are several F bombs.
It is not safe for little ears.
A whole bit of using various nicknames and metaphors for a certain powdery drug, and one of them is a Frozen reference. So you don't want your kid to be like, "Do you want to build a snowman? Frozen? What?"
nope, not that one. Not that guy.
No, not for the kiddies. Not that type of snowman. So, but oh my god, I'm so excited. I Guardians, they're pretty good about having some humor. Ant-Man usually is pretty funny because Paul Rudd is, funny whether he wants to be or not, I think.
And then Michael Pena, come on, you gotta give him some credit.
Yeah, we've been missing Michael Pena for a while, so we haven't had him or the Stan Lee cameos to give us that moment of levity. So it's nice to have Deadpool coming in and being like, you want to laugh? I'll make you laugh. So
even laughing at his new parent company, so you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
I love it.
Oh boy. I love it. I don't know if it ever is gonna happen, but Deadpool, Logan, Professor X, same room together.
Again, Deadpool would want to know which one.
Yeah. Oh heck, toss in Magneto too.
Yeah. Again, which one?
Well, which ones do you think I'm referring to?
Yeah, well, yeah. Those of us of a certain age are like, give us the old ones. None of this Days of Future Past bull crap.
Yeah, okay, know. That's what you're getting. But you know which ones I was referring to.
Yes.
The older persuasion.
Yes. We want the old English BFFs.
Yes, exactly. Those dulcet tones.
Yes. So that's exciting. And then the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame fan voting is, and other voting is done. Mm-hmm. For this year's selection of inductees.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the Rock Hall website is freaking out on me, so
I've got it. It looks like it's Mary J. Blige.
Yep.
Cher, Dave Matthews, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Kool and the Gang, Alexis Corner, John Mayall, MC5, Ozzy Osbourne, Suzanne DePass, Big Mama Thornton, Tribe Called Quest, Dionne Warwick, Norman Whitefield, and Jimmy Buffett, I think, is getting something honorary, but
I mean, he's on the list, so.
Yeah, I saw him on the list. I was like,
yeah.
He isn't already.
Well, Jimmy was just a recent add-on.
Okay.
Yeah, because he wasn't in before, but I'm thinking because of all the musical contributions and the tribute concert they did a couple weeks back, I think they realized. Right, they realize
that if they don't do something,
yeah,
and it's nice to see Foreigners. So I'm hoping that now we will get some of the other acts like REO Speedwagon, Journey, some of those other ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Johnny Rivers, for crying out loud!
Yeah,
most of the stuff he did was covered.
I'm still waiting for Weird Al. He has been eligible for like several decades at this point.
Let the fans have the keys to the caddy and select one of these years, please.
Although seeing Dave Matthews Band on there, I was like, how much older do I have to feel now?
Yeah,
true.
Come on, yeah. Guys.
It's like Dave Matthews Band was like the, if you weren't a boy bander or, you know, into the, you know, the pop part of the radio station, Dave Matthews Band was like the shit when I was in high school.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You were cool if when Dave Matthews Band came to town, because they always, when they came to town, their music venue is a big old outdoor amphitheater, and Dave Matthews Band would do two nights, so it was like a weekend thing when they would come to town, and it's like anybody who's anybody went out and like camped for the weekend. While Dave Matthews Band is in town. Okay, whatever. So yeah.
They were definitely in the rotation on the top 40 station I listen to when driving to school.
Yeah.
I'm like, that. Wait, the Hall of Fame? You guys? You're eligible?
Yeah. Okay. Or Mary J. Blige. I'm like, ugh. Like, cool in the gang? Really? How old am I?
Old enough, I guess.
I guess. Meanwhile, I'm looking like, Cher? How's it taken so long for Cher again?
Yeah, no kidding. I can't even remember if she got in with Sonny as part of Sonny and Cher. If they even got in, I don't know.
You'd have to look. You can yeah. look up the database on the Rock Hall website if you can get it to work.
Yeah.
Oh, so there's that. So that's cool. Should be interesting when they do the induction ceremony to see who shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Both to represent said artists, and then also who shows up in tribute of said artists. So, because I mean, especially with the Jimmy Buffett tribute concert, I'm like, I don't think you can top that. Yeah, you know, you got Paul McCartney wandering around holding a margarita. While Woody Harrelson and Jane Fonda are having arguments over which one of them was token it with Jimmy Buffett on the roof of, what was it, like the White House or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Some prestigious hotel or something like that. Woody Harrelson's like, yeah, it was me. And then Jane Fonda later, she's like, no, I was the one. Like, odds are it's probably actually both of you, and you probably just
don't remember
toked it a little bit too much, and you just don't remember the other person being there.
Yeah, the non-gummy gummies were a little too good.
Yeah. I mean, as we're recording this, 420 was just 2 days ago, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, and
Snoop Dogg and Willie Nelson came out and didn't see their shadows, and.
Yep,
everything's great.
Well, and Jimmy did write a song before he passed called "My Gummy Kicked In." So,
mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, the Rock Hall always an interesting thing,
and a soapbox that we can all share a little bit later if we ever decide to dedicate a full podcast episode to.
Yes,
said.
Yep. Round trip. Tweet them. Dear Rock Hall, how would you like to host in City of Cleveland? How would you like to host four crazy ladies?
Let us decide your picks for a year, please.
Mm-hmm. Just us. Nobody else.
Yes. Let us make some friends with a few rock musicians who will be very, very happy.
The year Weird Al gets in is the year I attend the induction ceremony. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I will figure out a way to get there.
Dear Weird Al, are you looking for a new personal assistant just for 24 hours?
Yeah.
I will get your drinks. I will get your dry cleaning. I will walk your dog.
Yeah. I can help you film TikToks. All right. A little closer to home. Indie PopCon is this weekend. So hopefully I see. Well, I know I will see some smiling familiar faces. I also know that there are some faces that unfortunately will not be seen because they will be at C2E2, which is also this weekend up in Chicago. It's at the way the calendar falls sometimes. I will be there all weekend, wandering around seeing what kind of trouble I can get into. I don't have a table this time around, so if I'm not attending a panel or presentation or in line to get a photo or autograph, Odds are, if you want to find me, check the live podcasting stage area, because that's just an easy. Because even if I'm not there, you can, Brandon should be there, and you can be like, "Hey, I'm looking for Rachel. Have you seen her recently?"
Because odds are
Brandon will have seen me recently. So yeah, just leave a message at the podcasting stage, and you don't necessarily leave it with Brandon, just someplace where I can find it, and we can always try to connect. So hopefully, usually, knock on wood, the signal at the Indiana Convention Center is better than it is at the one in Columbus.
Right. You ran into issues in Columbus, yes. Didn't you?
Yep. So should be slightly better in Indy, hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So, but yeah.
Make an offering to the Wi-Fi gods.
Yeah,
exactly. Really. Yes.
So, but I'm looking forward to it. Keeping it more laid back this year. Like, I hit it hard last year, between both Indy and Louisville. So this year I'm like, I'm just gonna take it a little easier this year.
Pace yourself.
A little older, you know, pace myself. So, but it should be a fun time. So I will try to report on any shenanigans John Barrowman gets into to the best of my ability. Speaking of Doctor Who, as we mentioned last week, when Hollywood returned, she would give further information on book club, because
yes,
I had to do the best I could.
you had to go on the fly. So, yes. Long story short, I thought I had voted. We were at a 4-way tie, so I narrowed it down to 2, and I decided that out of the 2 winners, I would. So it was Ghost of Avalon, then runner-up is Evil of the Daleks, that Fraser Hines kind of retweaked. So that will be the book for May, and then I will have a poll for June, and we will go from there.
Awesome talks!
So that is the book club news.
Yeah.
So, and I know there are going to be some new 15th Doctor, well, Shudigatwa based books coming out, but I want to wait till those hit stateside, physical, and not just ebooks, because I know stuff with libraries, sometimes it takes a while for them to get into the system. So I'm trying to be nice and save those for later dates and times where it's easily accessible for more to the public.
It is appreciated. I know, especially libraries, we can get the ebooks pretty quickly. Depends on if Libby, the Overdrive, they have it available for us to even purchase it all.
Right. And,
the print books, especially with the, I noticed with Doctor Who tie-in novels, it's very hit and miss if we can get the print ones. It didn't used to be, but now I've noticed that it's kind of, they've gotten a little funny about it.
Well, that, and they've kind of switched with the publishing, because it's just like, used to be UK and America would get them at the same time for both e and physical. Now UK is getting physical first, which, granted, hey, that's fine.
It's the motherland.
Motherland. Yeah. And then we get ours a bit down the road. So, but I mean, the e versions, yes, you know, day date, But so yeah. So yeah, that's the reasoning as to why. Hey, why isn't this up? Because it's out. I was like, I need to wait.
Yeah. So there are shenanigans afoot in the publishing on the yeah. publishing side with those things. So yeah, we noticed.
Uh-huh.
Thought we wouldn't notice, but we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Exactly.
Anyway, just keep refreshing Amazon, and eventually Amazon US and Amazon UK will start talking to each other, but
yeah.
Yes.
Not so much.
In the meantime, I'll have to find more room on my bookshelves.
That too.
Doctor Who already takes up multiple shelves all on its own. So.
Yes.
Just the Doctor Who.
We just need a TARDIS size library. That's all we need.
Yeah. That's what I need. I'm going to have to eventually probably have a like TARDIS bookcase just for Doctor Who stuff. So.
I mean, to paraphrase the meme for us book lovers, yeah, us as Belle, the reason why we wanted to be in the castle was for the library.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Gimme.
Not just for the books, although the books were great, but there was space for them.
Yes.
Space.
I just live in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It doesn't end, though.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Yep.
Yes. All right, Rachie, right. You ready to break out the...
No, we got feedback!
Some names? Oh, we got feedback, that's right, sorry.
Yep, we've got some feedback.
We got some feedback. So we got some feedback from Charlene. She says, I was just thinking about the mummy, and now you girls are talking about it. And yes, me and my folks watched The Mummy.
Oh,
yep. I think I like the first two Mummy movies. The third one is okay. You're with the majority, I think. I thought there was going to be a third Mummy movie, Brandon Fraser, we're going to remake, which turned out to be a flop. I think she means fourth, which that was something we forgot to mention, is yes, supposedly a fourth was going to happen, and what's her face? Rachel Weisz. Who took the place of Rachel Weisz said that she was up for doing another one, and then it never happened. So,
as happens in show business, they have ideas and they say it's going to happen, and then other things happen and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We got a remake, which turned out to be a flop. I wish this would get the Ghostbusters treatment. Plus, it's April, and The Mummy is a Halloween movie. I wouldn't say necessarily it's a Halloween movie, just because it has monsters on
it. It would. I mean, it would fit with Halloween, true, but I think it was.
It was a May release.
They're doing the 25th anniversary re-release this Friday, so.
Yeah, it's a summer-ish.
Yeah, it's one of those summer blockbusters, but yes, it could very well be a. In your Halloween movie rotation, if you so chose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want something with monsters that's not too scary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that would still make sense. Or, you know, you can watch it in the middle of July and enjoy it just as much. So,
yeah.
It's up to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever mood you're in, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah.
And you can watch it multiple times a year.
Exactly.
It's that good of a movie.
I think The Mummy Returns and the spinoff Scorpion King is my favorite pre-movie of The Rock before The Game Plan. He was really great in those films. Yeah, he was. CGI, he was. Not so much. But he was.
Yeah.
Definitely one of those wrestlers that was able to make the transition into acting and is like, oh, he's actually pretty good at this.
Mm-hmm.
I also think these films are my favorite performance of Brendan Fraser. He was okay in George of the Jungle, but he was the best for the Mummy films. My favorite line in these films are, I am a librarian. I was also bummed out that Rachel Weisz didn't come back for the third Mummy. That's why I said I like the first two movies. Also, I love little Alex in the second one. Also, I was excited when I was at Universal Studios to go on the Mummy ride. It was amazing. I want to go back and ride that again. You should, even if you don't need to try and dislodge a kidney stone. I think I first discovered the Mummy around the same time as the Prince of Egypt, like the same way I discovered Ever After and the Princess Bride and the Whitney Houston Disney version of Robert Hammerstein's Cinderella. Also, the Mummy movie fits with my adventure movies, along with Indiana Jones, Jungle Cruise, Jurassic Park, Jumanji, Pirates of the Caribbean, National Treasure, and Jungle Book, and Tarzan. Several of those we have covered, and some we may be covering in the nearest future. Hint, hint, watch wink, this wink, space. Nudge, nudge, yes. And yes, I own a lot of Hannah Montana merch, along with High School Musical. And last year, during Disney's 100th anniversary celebration, they announced Funko Pops of Disney Channel characters like Hannah Montana, High School Musical, and Lizzie McGuire, along with Mickey's Mickey dress for the Mickey Mouse Club. Because I watched the documentary of 100 Years of Disney, and they said the Disney Channel represents the Mickey Mouse Club. Yes, it does. I also went and watched the OG Mickey Mouse Club, and I found merch and planning to do a collection of it. I might do a Mickey Mouse Club Halloween group costume with some friends. That would be cute. Last thing, there's a Muppet version of The Wizard of Oz. Yes, there is. But anyway, that's all I have to say about the Mummy. Going back to she said that and then said one more addendum. Going back to the Mummy ride and Dark Universe, I read there's going to be a Dark Universe area at Universal Studios. Yes, there is. That's the idea. Is there's supposed to be a Dark Universe. But what that means for the Mummy attraction is to be determined.
Hopefully they keep it. Yeah. It would fit nicely over there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if they plan it right, because, I mean, they managed to make Star Tours at Disney's Hollywood Studios fit into the new Star Wars area without having to move it. They just built the Star Wars area so that it became part of it.
There you go.
So, I'm just saying.
Planning.
Yup. All right, then we got some feedback from Aaron. He says, patience is a virtue. Not right now, it isn't.
That's another one of my favorite lines.
Hello, my wonderful five-ish hosts. The first two Mummy movies are some good fun. I was a scaredy cat in my younger years, so I was apprehensive the first time I watched the first. However, I soon realized it was tense and fun, not scary. The first Scorpion King isn't a great movie, but I find it enjoyable as a companion piece. I have not watched any of the sequels, but I plan to the next time in a mood for a crappy movie marathon, something I do on occasion just for laughs. Well, yeah, it's perfect then.
Yeah. And you know what, Aaron, I gotta say good
on and there's you plenty for, of them you want you're gonna be busy for a while
partaking in bad movie marathons, because you know sometimes you need a good laugh whether or not the movie intended to be funny.
Yeah,
but that's cool that you do that.
Tomb of the Dragon Emperor is atrocious. Rachel Weisz didn't return because she hated the script. Smart woman. And Arnold Vosloo was approached to reprise his role as a reluctant ally in taking down Jet Li's mummy, but also hated the script, so the character had to be written out. From what I've read, even Jet Li was so upset with production that he did very little publicity.
Ouch. That really tells you something right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Want to know how much I hate this movie? I think the Tom Cruise movie is better. Significantly better.
Oh.
Take care, Aaron.
Wowza.
I understand and I tell where you're coming from, but that does seem a little bit harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I don't know how many times when I see the mummy come up on a channel guide, I really have to click, because there's been a couple of times where I've been faked out, mm-hmm. and they said, oh, this is going to be the Brendan Fraser version.
Nice! I turn,
watch it, and it's a Tom Cruise, and I'm just like, oh!
They're desperately trying to recoup some of their money.
And I hate that when that happens.
I'm just like, oh no. I mean, I think everybody, when it came out, were like, nope, this is a bad idea. Do not do this.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I understand wanting them, you know, Universal wanting to do something with the monsters. I understand that 100%. And normally I'd be like, okay, let's see what you got. And that's what they got. And it's like, ha! Who told you this was a good idea? Fire them. Fire them immediately.
Tom Cruise has to have something to do in between Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah. That is true. Oh. That is true. But it's like, I don't know that. Well, I don't know. And it was just marketed so oddly.
Yeah.
Because it was like, clearly.
Well, they were all like, oh, you know, this is going to be that, you know, we have plans for a dark universe. And then, I mean, I haven't seen it. And I have no desire to, but from what I understand, is like
I've seen a few.
Like everybody, like they were open about it being this whole what started this dark universe thing, but they were trying to like keep like what characters were coming next, like a surprise. But then everybody's like, we know Russell Crowe is Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Yep. Yeah.
Quit trying to make it a surprise. We read the writing on the wall. Yeah.
This is the dumb thing about that, is that with Marvel, it was very much like, okay, we're going to put out Iron Man, and we'll see what happens. And it worked, and it blew up, but they didn't make this whole big deal, like, look, it's going to be an interconnected universe, and we're all going to do all this stuff, and it's like, no, let's put this out there, like little fish bait.
Yeah.
And then if it works, we'll go forward. If not, well, then, you know, we put out a movie. Whatever. Yeah. And it worked. So what Universal needed to do was just like, here, we'll put out one movie, see if it works. And, you know, maybe doing The Mummy first was probably not a good idea, just because everybody thought so fondly of the Brendan Fraser Mummy movie. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe do something that hadn't been done within, you know, our lifetimes, the last little bit. Maybe do, like, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or Creature from the Black Lagoon, or, well, I don't know, Dracula might be, because you also had Twilight going on. So yeah. That idea might be iffy, but, like, do something that, you know, if you want to resurrect this, no pun intended, but yeah, it was a good idea. I commend them for having the idea. The execution, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not mind seeing them do something with the Universal Monsters. And you know what? That they're putting them in Epic Universe at the parks. That's a gold star. We'll say that. So, we'll see. I have heard a lot of people being excited at the prospect of having that at Universal Studios. So that should be a good time.
Yeah.
And we will always have the Brendan Fraser Mummy movie, even if, you know, at least one of the sequels was dog poop.
Yep.
Bless them for trying, I guess.
Yeah. Sort of. There was an attempt.
An attempt was made.
Even, you know, it, some of the sports at the Olympics, nobody ever walks away with a zero as long as they make an attempt.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
or something.
Something like that. Anyway, thank you.
I'm trying to be optimistic and positive. Oh.
No. I would love for them, and I know this has been floated around, like, tongue-in-cheek, but I would love for them to like have, here, let's have Joe Average try out all these Olympic things, so like when you know, so then we can see like, oh, this is how good these people really are, compared to what that guy, you know, fell on his face. These Olympic athletes, even the ones that come in dead last, are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yes,
Lane and Aaron, for your feedback as always. Now,
Yes. Sorry. Okay. Completely forgot about the feedback. Can you tell them about the names of the hat?
Yeah, we have not. We literally, I checked. We have not done this since June of last year. So.
Well, this is a good time to bring it back.
Yeah. Well, it's not an actual hat. I actually did used to use a hat, and then as we kept adding names, and the fact that that was not the best storage for them, so I have like one of those. Okay, this is the throwback for us 90s kids, but back in the day, if you had like a trapper keeper or a three ring binder. There were accessories that could also, you didn't have to do just paper and like tab dividers. They made accessories that could go in those too. And some of them were like pouches.
Yep.
That you could put like your pencils and your erasers and stuff in. That's what I've been using. So it's one of those that's got a little zipper. So
I love and those. And it probably fits in like a desk drawer or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I can get it squished flat so I can stick it just about anywhere and
perfect.
Oh, and it is. And like I said, I may have added three names earlier today, as I was double checking. So the stash. So all right. And for those that may be new or just forgotten, because again, it's been a while since we've done this. What we do is, as I, mix the slips of paper around, is I eventually pick one, and then what I do, and what
there's no pre-planning, no preparation. Nope.
They have no idea who, I don't even know who I pick until I pick it.
Yep, and we just talk about that person. Mm-hmm. But
as an added way to make it a little more interesting is, instead of just straight out telling you who it is, I make you figure it out.
Yes. So it's a little bit of I don't know, pick any
like guess who ish.
Yeah, guess who? Any game show where
you get
vague clues and you have to guess what it is.
Yes, and we do have a list. There is a master list that, because that's how we keep track of who we've done. So it's not like you're just like, oh, who? Yeah. Sometimes it's more obvious than others. So anyway, our first person is an American actor.
Okay.
He was born November 29th, 1964 in Kansas City, Missouri. His mother was a teacher, and his father was a clinical psychologist. He has a sister and a brother. And apparently they moved a lot when he was a kid.
Okay.
He graduated from high school in Denver and then went to the California Institute of the Arts. And he has, let's see. He is in one of our tent poles. Okay. He also is a musician, apparently. He plays the saxophone. Got a Grammy nomination for Best Spoken Word Album. And he has been, let's see, in two, yeah, I think just two films that have been discussed on Gold Standard. One is a Best Picture winner, The other is Patreon. Okay. But probably should have been a Best Picture winner.
64.
So he'll be turning 60 this year.
Yes.
Huh. Okay, I've got a guess.
All right, what's your guess?
Is it Don Cheadle?
It is.
Ah, okay.
Yes, or Donald Frank Cheadle Jr. Legally, so named after his father. Yes, he's got he actually has 2 Grammys, a Tony, 2 Golden Globe Awards, 2 SAGs, has been also nominated for an Academy Award, 2 BAFTAs, and 11 Primetime Emmy Awards.
Oh, so close to an EGOT.
Yes, he is one of the few Black performers to be nominated, to have nominations that would make an EGOT.
Okay, because I know I've seen him in things other than Marvel.
The MCU.
Yes, but now I am. No, that's not the award.
Yep. Yeah, apparently he sings.
I gotta look it up.
And did theater in school, including musicals and mime. Apparently, so if you're me, also... Don Cheadle, you should see. Yeah. You should see if he'll break out any mime performance for you.
He was in Ocean's 11. That's I think that might be where I remember him from, other than Marvel films.
Yeah. Yeah, he. Ring
Over his sag, Me with Adam Sandler was really good. Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, okay. I did not know this, although I guess I should have. He played Donald Duck in the new DuckTales.
Oh, cool. That's cool.
The DuckTales revival, which, okay. I didn't know that. Which I have actually watched. I've watched all of that series, but I've watched a good chunk of it, so okay.
He was in the Golden Girls spinoff, The Golden Palace.
I just saw that, yeah.
Which is really wild to see him with 3/4 of the Golden Girls.
It's just like all of these worlds are colliding.
Yeah. To see a very young Don Cheadle with the most of the Golden Girls in the so yeah, it was
okay, and he was also in Volcano. I was like, I know I've seen him in something else.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, Volcano with the Tommy Lee Jones, the one that
Anne Heche, yep.
Yeah, Anne Heche, the one that blows up Los Angeles.
Yes.
Not to be confused with the Pierce Brosnan Volcano.
Dante's
Peak.
Came out in the same year.
Yeah.
That mid to late 90s where they tried to revive the disaster film.
Yes.
Well, I mean...
Volcano, Twister, Dante's Peak.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, Independence Day.
Yeah.
What else? Mm-hmm. The Armageddon. Yeah, there was that stretch where they're like, hey,
Deep Impact.
Guy, we can make this stuff look a lot real.
Yep.
And
2012.
Yep.
All that stuff. It's...
Yep. They tried.
Yep.
Yeah. But the same year that he did the
background
Volcano
movies.
Yeah. The same year he did Volcano was the same year that he was in Boogie Nights, which we have reviewed on Gold Standard in the Patreon feed. So you can become a patron and go listen to our review about that with Aaron. With friend of the show, Aaron. It was his pick. So, and he's, it's funny because Don Cheadle, in Boogie Nights, along with Mark Wahlberg and a couple of other folks, He is one of the adult film stars. Yeah, he is the only one that we never actually see him do any adult filmmaking. I think because his character's kind of like, it pays the bills, but he really wants to do something else, and eventually he becomes a business owner by the end of the movie. The movie's from 97. I don't mind spoiling it, so. I thought that was funny. So he won the Golden Globe playing Sammy Davis Jr. in The Rat Pack, which is a TV movie. With Ray Liotta as Frank Sinatra. Okay. And yes, he is in the Oceans movies. He is in 11, 12, and 13.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Basher Tar. He's pretty good in those. I mean, the Oceans movies, it's been a hot minute since I've seen them, but I remember at the time thinking they were really good, especially at watching the OG Oceans movie. Funny enough,
mm-hmm.
would have Sammy Davis Jr. in it. Because the Rat Pack was the OG Oceans gang. Watching it and seeing how it diverts the ending is
mm-hmm.
completely different. It's a much happier ending with the George Clooney versions than the Rat Pack version. I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
if anyone wants to watch the Rat Pack version, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's still fun, you know, watching them figure out how, and especially because that was, you know, because the one made in the 60s, obviously, like, how to be really good thieves, like, the technology is different than what they would have had mm-hmm. in the, you know, the early 2000s, so... he was a guest star on ER. I remember seeing him in that as I was doing my binge of ER. So I was like, hey, look, it's Don Cheadle, which actually won him, or it got him an Emmy nod for outstanding guest actor in a drama series. And then in 2006, he co-starred and also co-produced the film Crash, which infamously won the Academy Award for Best Picture that year and should not have by any stretch of the imagination whatsoever. But he plays a detective, gets intertwined with some of the other stories that may or may not involve racism and, you know, him being black. Obviously that factors into it. So the movie's awful. I mean, the cast, if you look at it, it's great. Don Cheadle, he's pretty good. Got nominated for a BAFTA and a SAG award. But the movie itself is crap and so should not have won Best Picture that year. So by any means. And that is one of those films where they have asked Academy voters years later, you know, if you could go back and vote differently, in any Academy Awards, would you? And this was one, and they're absolutely right, because Brokeback Mountain should have won that year. But you can go listen to our review of that on Gold Standard, the Oscars podcast, and that's in the main feed, because Best Picture winner. So. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, because Crash came out the same year as Hotel Rwanda, which I swear, I remember that one getting a ton of awards, but I guess I'm remembering wrong, because I'm looking it up. It's like, oh, they were nominated. That one was nominated, but mm-hmm. didn't win. I mean, you know, things like the 18th European Film Awards it won.
Somewhere,
yeah. You know, stuff like that. So it was nominated for all kinds of awards, won about a handful of them, and didn't win any at the Academy Awards, which is a shame, because that movie was... That movie was a kick in the head, and in a good way.
Yeah. Oh. And then, famously, Cheadle came in to take over the role of James Rhodey Rhodes, a.k.a. War Machine, in Iron Man 2, after Terrence Howard got fired.
Yeah.
And they don't really acknowledge it. They just are like, yeah, this is our Rhodey now. He's been playing Rhodey ever since.
That's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Because for some reason, Terrence Howard thought that he was the star of the movie, not Robert Downey Jr. So. Sorry. Yeah, so he's been playing Rhodey ever since. Obviously, in the MCU films, but also the Disney Plus series Falcon and Winter Soldier. He voices Rhodey in the episodes of What If. He was in Secret Invasion, where he found out Rhodey was a Skrull. Mm-hmm. And we don't know how long Rhodey's been a Skrull, so they left that open for them to pin down at some point later. And then Rhodey is going to get his own movie, supposedly at some point in the future, Armor Wars. So he is not going anywhere as far as the MCU is concerned, which is fine by me, because I think he's a great Rhodey.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I just, anyone
who can stand toe-to-toe to RDJ's Tony Stark.
No offense to Terrence Towards.
Yeah.
Terrence.
I go back and forth.
Who was also in Crash, by the way.
I go back and forth between Terrence Howard and Don Cheadle as Rhodey, because I really do like Terrence Howard in that first Iron Man movie. And it was kind of a weird situation with the contract, and they're still not really all that forthcoming of the details of what really happened. Do I need to care? Probably not. But Don Cheadle's good too. So I don't know who would have been who I like better. I think they're both great. And
I don't think it's kind of a cop out, but it is what it is. I don't think Terrence had the vibe with Robert though. Like, there's something about Rob and Don that they just, like, you know, they put those two together and they just got it. You know, the whole relationship between Tony and Rhodey, so.
The vibe, the humorous.
Yeah. Let's see. He was on the TV show House of Lies, which he won Golden Globe. And let's see, he wrote, produced, directed, and starred in Miles Ahead, which is a film biopic about Miles Davis. Guess it helps that he already knows how to play saxophone, trumpet. Probably not that far of a stretch. And yes, he guest starred in the first season of DuckTales, providing the voice of Donald Duck.
It's just fun when we do these names from a hat and we're like looking at the list of things they've been in, like, oh yes, I've seen that. Oh, I've seen that. Oh, he was in that too. I didn't know, but I guess I should have.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. He's been a long time advocate to end genocide in Africa. That's awesome. Good for him. He was in the 2007 World Series of Poker.
Interesting.
He and poker player Annie Duke organized an annual charity poker tournament, Ante Up for Africa. I guess spun out of the 2007 World Series of Poker.
There you go. So that ties in with his humanitarian. It's like,
mm-hmm.
like he's not just playing poker to play poker.
Yeah. Let's see. In 2008, he was profiled in the PBS series African American Lives. I guess kind of a family history type thing. They found that his ancestors had been owned by the Chickasaw Nation, and they were not freed until 1866. And then his ancestors did not hold U.S. or Chickasaw citizenship until the 1890s. And then after doing a DNA test, they found that he is of Cameroonian descent. Awesome. He's a cool guy. He's not one that he tends to keep a low profile.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the most part.
You know, come in, do the job, do it well, and there you go. What else can you ask for?
Yeah, but. Get him in front of the camera, and he knows what he's doing.
Yep, absolutely.
So. All right. Well, that was... Yep. Nope.
Okay.
This bio, it's kind of... Like, I think he when he's not working, he tends to live kind of a quiet life other than his humanitarian work. So,
okay.
Yeah, which there's nothing wrong with that.
That's kind of refreshing, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, with the what, how many you get that are just out causing trouble or just in the negative press.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's.
No. Oh.
What'd you get now?
Opposite end of the spectrum.
Oh, okay.
So
female, white, and older.
Quiet and reserved, someone who's a bit loud and obnoxious.
I don't know if you necessarily call her loud and obnoxious. I mean, she definitely could probably command a room. if she stood up and started talking, I would stop whatever I was doing and be like, "Oh, what's she saying?" So she is English.
Okay.
Born the 9th of December, 1934. She's older than my dad, but not by a whole lot. she is highly considered one of Britain's greatest actresses.
Ooh.
And she's got the hardware to prove it. And of course, she made her professional debut with the old Vic. cutting her teeth with Shakespeare. Like every British person does.
Okay. Has she had any connection with a couple of people in our Shakespeare fandoms? Or tentpole fandoms, shall I say. Sorry.
Wait. Yeah, well,
I swear we've talked about her. Is it? It's not Maggie Smith, is it?
No, we already did her.
Yeah, that's what I was like. We've already done her.
Yeah.
She was also born in 1934. Okay, so not Maggie Smith.
She is technically... No, she's not in any of our...
But has she had connections in other acting with actors that are in our tentpole fandoms?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, her CV is so long that it's like
it's okay. I've got an idea because I did a search on birthdays.
Yeah. So it's like her list of performances is its own Wikipedia page. So
okay. With the Shakespeare in that. I'm wondering, is she a dame?
Yes, she is.
Would it happen to be Judi Dench?
It would be.
Ah.
Yes. Dame Judi Dench.
She does have a book coming out about Shakespeare.
Nice.
This week.
Oh.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Podcasting Gods.
It is Shakespeare, the man who pays the rent.
Yes.
I pull her up and it's on the little box where it's like born, education, occupation. At the bottom it says awards and it just gives you a link to her full list of awards.
Her CV is quite long, so. But we must start from the beginning. Judith Olivia Dench was born in the Haworth area of York in 1934, the daughter of an Irish mother and an English father. Her mother was born in Dublin, her father, a doctor from Dorset, who grew up primarily in Dublin and who fought in the Western Front in World War I. She did the BBC show Who Do You Think You Are, which is, you know, similar to what Don Cheadle did, where they do genealogy, is revealed that she's descended from the Billy family of Danish aristocrats. And Steen Anderson Billy, the illegitimate son, as well of Anders Steenson Billy, as well as Claude Billy, the grandfather of Danish astronomer Tycho Brahe. She's distantly related to Sophie, the Duchess of Edinburgh, as both are descended from Robert Molesworth, 1st Viscount Molesworth, because that's the way they roll over in the UK.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the fun part of doing your genealogy. Once you get connected into one of those royal families, it is smooth sailing. You're like, oh, there's my entire line.
Yeah.
You're in.
Back to the beginning.
Yeah. She had two older brothers, Peter and Jeffrey. Both of them have passed. She attended a secondary school in York at a Quaker Independent Secondary School and became a Quaker. You don't hear about Quakers a whole lot. As people use it as they identify as their religion. You think Quaker, all you think is oatmeal.
yeah.
Here in the US. But her parents, her father was the physician for the York Theatre Royal, and her mother was the wardrobe mistress. And actors would often stay at their house, very much like if you've read Sir Patrick Stewart's book. You know, as he went from place to place, if it wasn't someplace that had dorms, he had to find essentially a room to rent. So she got involved in the theater very early on, just for fun. When her brother attended the Central School of Speech and Drama, she decided that she wanted to maybe go to drama school. Because she was actually learning how to do set design first. She said when she saw Peggy Ashcroft play Cleopatra, she said it changed her life. She applied and was accepted by the Central School, which was then based at the Royal Albert Hall in London, where she was a classmate of Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That's cool. So she made her first professional stage appearance in 1957 with the Old Vic Company at the Royal Court Theatre in Liverpool as Ophelia in Hamlet.
As one does.
Yes. According to the reviewer of the London Evening Standard, Dench had, quote, talent which will be shown to better advantage when she acquires some technique to go with it. That's a backhanded compliment if I ever read one.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, those critics. You gotta make themselves feel important somehow.
Oh.
And if they're British critics, it explains everything.
That too. But then again, if you're just starting out.
Yeah.
Then she made her London debut in the same production at the Old Vic. She was in the company for four seasons, and her roles included Catherine in Henry V, Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, among others. And then she joined the Royal Shakespeare Company in 1961, made her Stratford-upon-Avon debut in 1962 as Isabella in Measure for Measure. And bounced around from company to company. And then she did a little bit of TV in the 60s. She was in the very last episode of a series called The Four Just Men. She's also in the police series Z Cars. I thought that was a funny name for a police TV show.
Or if you're in Britain, it's Z Cars.
Yeah.
Yep.
She made her film debut in The Third Secret, and then got a small role in the Sherlock Holmes adaptation, A Study in Terror, in 1965, which starred John Neville. Let's see. She won a BAFTA in 1966 for her role in the series Talking to a Stranger. BAFTA Award for Most Promising Newcomer to Leading Film Roles. And then another BAFTA Best Actress Award in 1968 for the BBC drama Talking to a Stranger. In 1968, she was offered the role of Sally Bowles in Cabaret. She thought they were joking.
Okay.
She did it anyway. got good reviews. So it opened in the Palace Theater in February 1968. A bunch more Shakespeare. A Macbeth. Playing alongside Ian McKellen.
Now, as you get into the 90s with her, he's also cast as M in the James Bond franchise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Her first movie being GoldenEye, which, so, a couple years ago, gosh, I guess it's been a lot longer than that now, oh, Jared and I went through and watched all the James Bond movies in order. And this took us a while, but it was fun. And when we got to the Pierce Brosnan ones, you know, and I don't know. I don't remember really if like how people felt about Judi Dench being M after, you know, so long of it. But I also think with GoldenEye, where it was kind of a soft reboot of the franchise, it was probably a good thing also that it was Judi Dench as M. Is kind of amazing, and she's brilliant, and I really love her in those the Pierce Brosnan films. She did great with Daniel Craig, don't get me wrong, but
I like that they kept her.
Yes,
with the transition over to
some continuity there, but yeah, she was great. But I think I like her better. I guess I just like the Pierce Brosnan ones better overall. But yeah, she was a huge part of what I liked about that. And then also, Jared would get very mad at me if I did not mention this. So the Riddick movies with Vin Diesel, where I don't know if y'all know these stories. These are some of Jared's favorite movies. He loves Vin Diesel, but he has never seen a Fast and Furious movie. But he loves Riddick, and that's because Riddick is basically Vin Diesel playing his D&D character.
Or, you know, yeah, cool. Character.
And in fact, behind the scenes, Vin Diesel taught Judi Dench and some other people that were in the movie how to play D&D. And so now Judi Dench plays D&D with her grandkids.
Oh, she is like, on that wall at some of those games and for when they were listening.
Yeah. So there's a video of them having a D&D game, you know, behind the scenes, like, I don't know, they're waiting for some set thing or another to happen. And like she rolls, she attacks, and she beats whatever they're fighting, and it's just so funny. She just gets up and just starts going, "I did it." She gets very excited. And Diesel has even said, like,
any session or a round of D&D for a hurry up and wait on a film set. Hey, yep. Sounds good to me.
And Vin Diesel even said, like, yeah, like, she's one of the best D&D players I've ever played with.
I wonder what kind of character she played. Did he share that?
I don't remember. I would have to ask Jared, because he knows this story frontwards and backwards. But I know, us talking about Judi Dench, I would have to mention that, because it's just such a funny, amazing story, and I love it. I'm like, oh my goodness, I love Judi Dench all the more, even though there's like not a ton of her movies that I have seen personally.
No,
but then I realized she was also voiced one of the cows on Home on the Range. I was like, oh yeah, that movie happened. But yeah, the whole Diesel D&D thing was just, oh my goodness. In fact, I'm gonna look it up, see if I can make sure I get the story. Oh, there it goes. Let's see. La 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 la. Hold on. Okay. So Vin Diesel. Okay, I looked up this. He's a gamer at heart. Okay. Okay, so here's why he convinced Judi Dench to play Dungeons and Dragons. So it was a game of, it was with Vin Diesel, Judi Dench, Carl Urban, and Thandie Newton. I'm not sure that. Anyway, so he's like, so the elementals in the movie come from air elementals. The attributes have been argumented a little bit for Judi Dench. So let's see. So he brought the fantasy element to the movie. The director brought the sci-fi. And so yeah, after shooting, because Judi Dench's character in Riddick is an elemental, basically. So he was showing her in Dungeons and Dragons, like where all this stuff came from. So he did that. So they would play after they were done filming, and so that's how he like helped her figure out, you know, her character, and then they would play after they were done filming, which is so funny.
Just that is so cool
to imagine Vin Diesel playing D&D with Judi Dench. She's like one of my favorite bits of trivia. But then, yeah,
it's just so interesting how many stars we're finding out now play D&D. Because this weekend I didn't have a chance to watch it, but I think I can watch it on demand on Twitch. But Todd Stashwick, who played in Star Trek Picard, wound up getting Jonathan Frakes, Will Wheaton, and another gal from Picard to play D&D for to raise money for a children's cancer research fund thing. And I saw a few clips and it was just hilarious. So it's just amazing how our fandoms are interconnecting and branching out.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So Judi Dench not only plays D&D with her grandkids, she's actually the DM. Which I can imagine her playing up the characters in that proper accent of hers with her Shakespearean acting background.
Yes.
This is amazing. Grandmother of the year. It's like, forget the Oscars, forget the BAFTAs, forget all that hardware. You're DMing for your grandkids.
Yes. I get to play D&D with my granny and she's our DM.
That is fantastic. That is.
That is awesome.
Oh, that's funny.
So yeah. So you thought Judi Dench was cool, but you just didn't know how cool she was.
Yeah,
exactly.
We love her.
Now, yes. To show how much I am an old soul, I'm pretty sure I was an old person in a past life or something.
Well, eventually you will be an old person.
But yeah, I act like I'm much older sometimes. But anyway. My local PBS station on the weekends at night, I think it was like Saturday nights, they would show some BBC programming. Okay. And it tended to be like, you know, upstairs, downstairs, and what's the one where the I can't remember the name of the show, the woman, she's like middle class, but she acts like she's much higher class, and she wants to be much higher class. Her last name's like Bucket, but she says it's pronounced
okay.
Okay.
I think it's called Keeping Up Appearances.
Yes. So stuff like that. We didn't get Doctor Who, unfortunately. At least not while I was watching it. I don't think Indy got Doctor Who on our local PBS channel till late, I think. If we ever did at all. But that is where I would watch my episodes of Are You Being Served, which we discussed ages ago. That tended to be back to back with As Time Goes By.
Yes.
Which the title song is exactly the, you know, you must remember this, a kiss is just a kiss, you know, that song. That was the theme song for it. But anyway, Dame Judi Dench was one of the starring roles. She played Jean. And it was about the story of her. She's a widow. She owns a secretarial agency with her daughter, Judy, and Sandy, who is Judy's best friend. Her relationship with Lionel Hardcastle. And the story is that the show ran from 1992 to 2005. This tells you how long this it was around for a while. Although that's only 67 episodes, because this is the BBC we're talking about. But the backstory is with these two characters, as that Gene and Lionel knew each other as kind of like high school sweethearts. Then the war happened, presumably the Second World War. He got shipped off, and she became a nurse, and so they got separated. And they wrote to each other, and then at some point, Gene stopped receiving Lionel's communications, and she didn't know if he was dead or what. So when the war ended, she went and moved on with her life and got married and had her daughter, and then eventually became a widow, and meets back up with Lionel years later, and he's been married I think a few times and divorced. It wasn't World War II, it was Korea. He wrote her, the letter went missing. Gene assumed he had lost interest in her and refused to ask the army to locate him. He decided that she must have lost interest in him. So after his service, he went to Kenya, got married, got divorced, became a coffee farmer, wrote a book about his life in Kenya. He's starting to write a book about his life in Kenya and needs a typist to help him. So he goes to Jean's business, not realizing that she owns it. Eventually their romance rekindles. It's somewhat situational comedy. At one point, Lionel is marrying Gene's daughter, and Gene is dating this guy much more age appropriate for her daughter. Those two end up getting together. Much later, she and Lionel figure it out. It's late in the series. I think towards the end, where Lionel goes to museum, just to spend time for the day. And when he comes back to their house, he tells Gene that the letter that he wrote to her that got lost is on display in the museum. And they actually they end up giving him a copy of it so that he can show it to her and see what he wrote. So it's just one of those that's like, kind of star-crossed, lost, what's that Gwyneth Paltrow movie with the doors? Sliding Doors. It's cute. It's very cute. It's very much, BBC sitcom. But I don't know. I don't know why I became so like enamored with this show, but I was. I loved it. There's some fun characters. Jean's life is brought into chaos sometimes by her sister-in-law, which is her late husband's sister. Lionel's father is like very grab life by the horns, and Lionel's very reserved. So I believe there's the DVD set out there. My guess is if it's streaming anywhere, it's probably on BritBox, would be my guess. But anyway, I was obsessed with that show. and loved watching it. So like I knew Judi Dench from that and James Bond. That was my frame of reference for anything related to Judi Dench. And then of course she famously won an Academy Award for her portrayal of Queen Elizabeth I in Shakespeare Love. One of the better performances of that. Yes, I was writing this on BritBox. Because it would be her portrayal of the Queen Elizabeth. One of the better performances in that film. Again, as discussed on Gold Standard, you can go listen to our review of Shakespeare in Love and hear us, at least me, I'm pretty sure, tear it apart. she's won a Tony for her Broadway performance in the role of Esme Allen in Sir David Hare's Amy's View. Yes, and then, yeah. James Bond. There's a wax statue of her as M at Madame Tussauds in London. Yeah, there. Yeah, she's in. Yeah. The Chronicles of Riddick.
Yep.
2004. She was picked, handpicked by Vin Diesel, who had the Raiders recreate the character for a female, because he wanted to work with her.
Cool.
Even though, as she said, it was tremendous fun, although she has had absolutely no idea what was going on in the plot. Of course, you know, besides Shakespeare, what's the other one? Jane Austen. She's in the 2005 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice with Keira Knightley.
She was a lovely Lady Catherine. By which I mean Lady Catherine is a terrible human being, and Judi Dench played her accordingly.
Yeah, Joe Wright, who directed it, wrote her letter. It says, "I love it when you play a bitch. Please come and be a bitch for me."
That works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's worked with just about everybody that you could think of. Anything and everything. You know, Keira Knightley, Donald Sutherland, Maggie Smith, you know, Kate Winslet, Charles Dance. of course, Daniel Craig, Kate Blanchett. In 2008, she became the new, and as of we're recording this, I believe still the narration for Spaceship Earth, which is the attraction inside the geodesic sphere at Epcot in Florida. I've only ever been on Spaceship Earth while she was the narrator, so she, as far as I know, she is the narrator. I've heard recordings of previous narrators. Walter Cronkite was one of them. so, but anytime I've ever been on Spaceship Earth, she has been the narrator, so, which is always fun. You go on and you just hear that voice, like, grand and miraculous spaceship. She starred alongside Daniel Day-Lewis and Marion Cotillard and, of course, more Shakespeare, more musicals, more plays. I've not seen it, but it's supposed to be very good. The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
That's what I've heard too. Yeah.
I've heard that's supposed to be really good.
Deal when it came out.
And of course, you know, her reign as M ended with Skyfall in 2012.
Yep.
Of course, there is a sequel to the second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yep.
Oh, more historicals, more Shakespeare. She's in Tim Burton's Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. She plays the headmistress, a headmistress. She's in Kenneth Branagh's Murder on the Orient Express, which is very good. Highly, highly recommend. If you've not seen any of the Kenneth Branagh Perot stuff yet, you need to, because it's so good.
Yes. It's kind of right up there with the stuff that he's done with Shakespeare.
Yep. For better or for worse, she started Old Deuteronomy in the film adaptation of Cats.
Oh, goodness.
She did it in a stage production of Cats. Way back in the day.
And it probably made a lot more sense on stage.
Yes. But yeah, she's in the, yeah. Like, wait, the less we talk about that version of Cats, the better. We don't talk about Cats.
No, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, her stage CV is just so long, her film, her television and film, it's so long. 2020 Artemis Fowl. She plays herself in an episode of Vicious. and of course, she plays herself in an episode of Stage.
Mm-hmm.
She lends her voice to the role of M in several James Bond video games. But of course. So she's won an Oscar. She has won several BAFTAs for both film and television. She's won a Golden Globe. She's got a couple SAG Awards. She's got a Tony. She just needs an Emmy. And she would have an EGOT. Unless you want to swap out the E for Emmy and change that to the Evening Standard Theater Awards. And in that case, she's already good.
Well, they'll need to nominate her in something for an Emmy, I guess.
Yeah.
Come be in something on this side of the pond and on television.
Yeah. In 2013, she was listed as one of the 50 best dressed over 50 by The Guardian. she married actor Michael Williams in 1971. And they were together until he died from lung cancer in 2001. They only had one child, a daughter named Finty, who was born in 1972. And through her, she has a grandson. And then since 2010, she's been in a relationship with conservationist David Mills. They met when she agreed to officiate at the opening of a new squirrel enclosure at the British Wildlife Center. That's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, has her age, she's had to cut back some on her work because she suffers from macular degeneration. So one of her eyes is chronically dry and the other one is chronically wet. So she can't read, so she has people read her scripts to her. But she has a photographic memory, so if she's read it before, she's good. Because she was able to recite Twelfth Night straight from memory.
Holy cow.
She had knee surgery in 2013. Went well. And she still wants to work. She's very much against the prejudice of that sometimes is held against older actresses. She said in 2014, "I don't want to be told I'm too old to try something. I want to see for myself if I can do it, rather than be told you might have a fall or you can't learn your lines. Age is a number. It's something imposed on you. It drives me absolutely spare when people say, 'Are you going to retire? Isn't it time you put your feet up or tell me my age?'"
Well, if you're going to tell Judi Dench that she can or can't do something, heaven help you.
Yes.
He does not seem like the type to suffer.
Hold my beer.
Yes. One word for you. Run.
Yeah. Watch her go. Ready to stand back and just let her go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
She is the patron and president of the Alumni Foundation of the Drama Studio London, a patron of the British Shakespeare Association, vice president of the Wildlife Conservation, why can I not say that word? NGO, Fauna and Flora International. She has participated multiple times in the Explorers Against Extinction Wildlife Conservation fundraiser, Sketch for Survival, in which celebrity artists join prominent wildlife artists in sketching wildlife as well as they can in 26 minutes, and the results are auctioned off.
Okay.
Yeah. At one point in the late 90s, she was the patron of upwards of 180 charities.
Dang.
Many of which are related either to the theater or to medical causes. So, Dana Judi Dench. She's maybe slowed down just a little bit, but she's not stopped.
Yep, and we will enjoy her as long as we are, as she is able to do what she does best.
Considering she turns 90 this year.
Yep.
You go then, Coco. Hey, you know, Betty White was still going up, and then so was the Queen, right up until the very end. So, yes. Just like she said, don't discount these little old ladies.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Not by any means.
Nope. Something about 1934, just.
Yeah.
Dench, Maggie Smith.
Yeah.
All our favorites.
So. Yes, this is 1930s and late 20s, or you know, well, even mid 30s, ladies. Just gotta watch out.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Get out of the way.
Yep.
We love them.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good roundup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more Don Cheadle in the MCU, and stay tuned for whatever the hell Judi Dench wants to do, because she's Dame Judi Dench and she can do whatever the hell she wants.
Yes.
Exactly.
Sweet. So, with that being said, if any of our listeners want to chime in with their thoughts on either of these two fine thespians we discussed today, your favorite performances or maybe behind-the-scenes stories or something of note or whatever, you know, anything else we covered today in the news and whatnot, send us some feedback. Our email address is fiveishfangirls@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, which is thefiveishfangirls.com. That has links to all of our social media. You can also find the show notes there. So a link to things that we talked about here. And you can also leave comments on all those places. We will treat those as feedback. So that's also a way to do that. And we also have a merch shop and a Patreon if you feel so inclined and you would like to support us monetarily. That would be very much appreciated if you can. That all goes right back into supporting the podcast and letting this continue to waffle on about all these silly things that we do. But however you express your support, we thank you for listening. Thank you for being our audience, our fans, our feedbackers, all those things, because you guys are awesome and we love you. And thank you again. Thank you for just being there.
Absolutely. Cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, with that, we shall sign off for this week.
This is Chrissy saying goodnight from Salt Lake City.
This is Holly from Wisconsin saying good evening.
And this is Rachel in Indianapolis, Indiana. We'll see y'all at PopCon this weekend. Woo woo! Thank you, our five-ish fam, for joining us on this week's geeky journey. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Stay connected with us on our website, thefiveishfangirls.com, and follow us on most social media with @fiveishfangirls. Plus, check out our nonprofit, Fangirls Give Back, to see how we're making a positive impact in our community. Until next time, stay nerdy and let the squee continue.